Today on the Guy at the Movies podcast, we have Josh at the Movies to chat everything red, white, and royal blue, as well as some things like the latest strike updates, whether or not Gal Gadot is being played by DC Studios, and the Talk to Me sequel that is coming down the pike, which was inevitable, I think. All that and more on today's pod.
Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had.
So this movie was garbage.
Look at this.
You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing. You know what I mean?
How? You know, you're lucky to have me back.
You're never going to get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up.
So chaotic.
Welcome to the Guy at the Movies podcast. I am Joe. Sean is on vacation for 2 weeks on the Cape, as he does every year in August. So he's not with us, but we have Josh at the Movies joining us today to chat everything about the movie that you and I think both love, Josh, Red, White, and Royal Blue, and a lot of other stuff. How are you?
I'm pretty great. How are you?
We're double at the movies today.
Yeah, double at the movies there. Gosh. That's awesome. Yeah, right? We're very creative. I think that's what that tells people.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, right? Well, we have a few things we want to get to today. Very happy to have you here. Josh, tell people a little bit kind of about your platform, your website, where they can find you.
Yeah, so my website
is joshatthemovies.com. And, you know, very to the point. I interview, although not as much lately because of the strikes, but I interview creatives and cast, and then just generally do movie reviews, TV reviews, all the like. And I have an editor and kind of co-partner on that. Name's Allison Brown. She does that with me too.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, awesome stuff, awesome stuff. And we're happy to have you here. So let's dive in and start with, we have to talk about the Continental trailer, I think. This is a show that's been teased for a long time as a prequel to the John Wick movies and focusing on the titular Continental, you know, I was going to say structure, but, you know, the lore behind the Continental buildings and kind of how that all came to be. And I believe it's 4 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. But we got the first full trailer here, and I'm intrigued by this. I don't love when movies, like, I've always said that John Wick's I've struggled with, because it's very clear that they didn't expect the first one to do as well as it did, and then they've just been building the story kind of as they go, and that's always frustrating because it's like, oh well, this will be cool. Oh well, let's explore that a little more and see what we can do here. And what if, you know? And so I kind of feel I'm a little nervous about the Continental, because I feel like they're trying to push through some background there, and I'm just hoping that it all ultimately makes sense. But Josh, what are your thoughts there with the Continental series? Are you a John Wick fan?
Oh yeah, I actually
I've seen all of them in theaters, but especially my husband is like obsessed, although I definitely didn't agree with him about Chapter 4 because he said that was his least favorite, so we, you know, won't go into that. But yeah, I know. I'm definitely into 70s NYC stuff. So that part of the Continental definitely intrigues me. But I don't know that from the trailer I was really getting much of a John Wick vibe from the trailer, to be honest with you. Like, I'm very intrigued by it because the Continental is so interesting to me in general. But I don't know.
I'm a little iffy.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And it's funny because I think that so much of it works because of so much of the lore around Continental works because of Ian McShane's performance and his involvement with it. So it's going to be interesting exploring like the younger characters here. And I don't know. I struggle with prequels like this, but, you know, they're really trying to milk John Wick for all it's worth. That's probably why we're getting John Wick 5 coming down the road, even though, spoiler, he died at the end of the last movie. But we shall see. We shall see. It's funny because Peacock is starting to get some wins here, which is interesting. Have you watched Twisted Metal yet?
I haven't watched that yet, but
I'm obsessed with Nev Campbell, so that's very much on my list. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
So you must be obsessed with Scream.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite
My favorite movie franchise. Yeah.
I won't ask you to rank them all right now, but Neve Campbell is very interesting in this series because she plays like a really nasty woman, and she plays it really well, and it's so against type for her, but I love it. And so it's just a very interesting series because it's much better than I thought it would be, and it's much weirder than I thought it would be, but it's doing really well for Peacock, and with some of the other movies that they're throwing on there, I think they're finally starting to get some traction. Whereas they've kind of been like fledgling for a little while, but we shall see. I think the Continental is really going to help them. They're trying to pump as much content there as they can to get, you know, the average fan. So, all right, Josh, we have to talk about Red, White, and Royal Blue. This is the movie event of the summer for me. No, I'm kidding. This is the book that, or the movie that's based on the Casey McQuiston novel that came out in 2019. And the quick premise of it is that the son of the president of the United States has a frenemies thing going on with the first prince of the UK, and ultimately they fall in love and hijinks ensue. It's really interesting because this book, I was talking to my friend about it last night when we were at the Phillies game. This book is very steamy, and it's very, I don't even know how to describe it, but I remember when I was sitting reading it, my mother was reading something else. We were up in the Poconos and she was reading something over on the front porch, and I was reading that, and I was getting to some of the parts of it where it gets really steamy, and I felt like I was reading smut sitting next to my mother. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. What is this? What's going on? So I was extremely nervous about this movie because book to film adaptations don't always work. And this was a book that I absolutely love and adore. But I was very happy when I saw the film a few weeks ago, very, very happy that I kind of loved it. And I left thinking, oh my gosh, is this just because I love the material, or is this actually a really good film? And after seeing it again, I lean towards the latter. I just think that this is a very well done film. But before diving into any of those specifics, Josh, what were your reactions to Red, White, and Royal Blue?
Well, in short, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was definitely one of my favorite movies of the year. And I haven't even read the book. I really didn't have... I knew it was based on a book. Typically, at least back in the day when I had more time, I used to always, you know, before the new young adult adaptations or whatever were coming out, I would always go back and read. Now I'm kind of doing the opposite. So like Aristotle and Dante, which also comes out September, but I saw that back at TIFF. And after seeing it, I read the book and loved it. Kind of did that with Heartstopper, and I'm doing that again. About to do that again with Red, White, and Royal Blue, because it was just so good. And there was so much material, but it didn't feel like it was, you know, bogged down in some of these typical things where it's just like nothing but exposition, or even where, you know, like 50 Shades of Grey, where it's just like nothing but steamy scenes, like sexy scenes. It was kind of a good mix of story and intimacy. So I loved it.
I thought the intimacy was very tasteful the way they did it. There's some pushback that people are saying, oh, it's rated R, why didn't they go further? But I think that would have taken away from the core of the movie. It's interesting that you're doing this backwards, reading the book, because I think what you'll find, and this is common with every book to film adaptation, there's a lot that's left out and there's some things that are changed. It's kind of, I keep comparing it to Harry Potter, like when Hermione Granger started the union for the elves and stuff. And that was left out. And that's a huge subplot in what, Prisoner of Azkaban, maybe, or maybe it's later.
Goblet of Fire. That one's Goblet of Fire. Goblet of Fire.
I'm also a big Harry Potter.
There you go. Perfect. Goblet of Fire is my favorite one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But like in this, so a few things that are changed, and these aren't major spoilers, they're just facts. Alex's sister is left out of the movie. So in it, he has a sister who is kind of like the third of the trio of him, Nora, and his sister. And she has some really great scenes. She's really lovable. But it's interesting, the director here, Matthew Lopez, was talking about how just some cuts had to be made. And I think that having two strong female characters like that with Nora and the sister, they kind of in the film would end up playing sort of the same role for Alex. And of course, if they threw everything in from the book and every character, we would end up with a 10-hour movie, which I wouldn't be opposed to in this case. But there's also another subplot where there is a senator who is also gay and is working with the is kind of like the mentor to Alex as he's going through all these emotions, but also then ends up being an enemy ultimately politically. And so there's more politics at play there. So that part was left out as well. And the final major thing I'd say is the queen and king are gender swapped. So in the book, it's the queen. In the movie, it's the king. And of course, we get Stephen Fry in kind of a tongue-in-cheek role as he is an out gay actor playing the heavy king role here and trying to tell, I almost said Nicholas, which is the actor's real name, but trying to tell Henry that he needs to fall in line with the royals here. What did you think about some of the supporting characters here? In particular, I just to put it out there, Sarah Shahi, I think was absolutely incredible here as the deputy chief of staff. She has some really funny lines, and I thought just had an incredible energy. But let's talk about the chemistry all throughout the cast here and the casting in general. What were your thoughts?
Well, I can tell you, I thought the most interesting one was probably Uma Thurman's accent, whatever's going on there. But I actually liked her in that. It was a very different role for her, but I liked Nora. I did think Beatrice seemed to have like a pretty small role. I don't know if it was the same in the book, but I didn't think she really made much of a mark in terms of, you know, how involved the Nora becomes later in the movie.
Who else do we got?
Clifton Collins Jr. as the father.
Yes, he's good.
Yeah, and then Sarah Shahi. Why am I blanking out on her character's name? And she's one of the funniest characters.
I think it was like Zara or something.
That's probably
Zara.
Wrong.
That's exactly what it was.
Is that right?
Nope, you're right. That's one thing. You'll see this when you read the book too, that she completely nailed everything about Zara. Like, that is how Zara is in the book. And the one scene where she walks in and finds Henry hiding in the closet, which I think is also a very interesting way of that scene playing out. I just thought she was hilarious and on point there. I was like, put her in everything. She is amazing.
She was so good.
Yeah,
I love how they really had a couple scenes where, you know, people walk in on them, like the first scene where someone walks in on them and Henry's like pretending to fix a bookcase
in the red room.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yep. What did you think? So, Josh, I identify as a gay man here, and one of the things that I really enjoy with the movie is I felt like it was one of those LGBT films that we don't see often, where it doesn't end either in complete heartbreak or someone having AIDS, to be quite blunt. Like, I feel like that always is where these stories go, and there's always a sadness to them. But we, with this, I think one of the reasons the book was so successful as well is it's a very positive story. And even the conversations with, you know, Uma Thurman's character as the president and her son with Alex, when they're talking and she says something about Truvada and bottoming and stuff, and it just, I absolutely lose it. It's just a really good conversation that they have there. It's nice to see a welcoming family portrayed. Not saying that that's how everyone is. Obviously we know that that's not how everyone is, but we've seen the problematic stuff in the past. We've seen the families that are that put their children through the ringer, and I felt like this was a nice, you know, more streamlined, but more positive take on this. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think there's been like a little bit of a movement, at least in the last few years, towards more like wholesome, you know, gay entertainment, because there was so long where all it was gays were the villains, you know, gays had sad stories, AIDS and all. I mean, again, that's very, very important stories and stuff that needed to be told and needed to happen for us to get where we are, I think, in representation wise. But it's definitely been refreshing. Again, another close relative would be Heartstopper to me. Like, it's very wholesome and sweet, and it still does have, you know, I think important messages for not only just adults, but young adults, you know, people that are coming up now, and they get a lot more representation, positive representation, than we ever got growing up, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I said when I first saw this that it's a movie that I wish would have existed when I was younger, because it is, I think, just so well well done, and the representation, like you said, is great there. The other aspect of this that I think we need to mention is it is one of the characters is a Latino character, which is great. The representation in that front is positive. But then also, you know, Alex doesn't identify as gay. Alex identifies as bisexual. And that's something that, you know, we talk about it in the community a lot, where, you know, the B sometimes gets left out. In this, and I think Matthew Lopez has been very open about this, the B wasn't forgotten here.
Sorry about my dogs.
Oh, you're okay.
I don't know if you can hear them. They're going crazy.
They have a lot of opinions.
They do, clearly. I totally agree. I think there hasn't been all that much, representation for bisexuality in cinema in general. So it's kind of refreshing. And I think that's part of the movie too, is him exploring his sexuality, because at first you're not really sure, obviously there's a wide range of different, sexual preferences anyone can have. So it's also nice that during the course of the movie, he comes to realize that, yeah, that's the label that he most identifies with. And that's where he feels that he fits in the best,
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally with you there. And the chemistry between those two leads was just, I think, excellent. And without that, the whole movie would have kind of flopped. We'd like to rate things out of 5 here. If you had to give this movie a rating out of 5, Josh, what would you give it?
Well, I'm going to have to go with what my Letterboxd rating was and my review, which was a 5.
Yes, that's how I
I really, really loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm there. I'm right there with you. And I sat on it for a little bit because I was like, am I reacting just because I love the material that it's based on? Or is this actually really good? And when I saw it again, I was like, yep, this is really good. It's also really well made. The flirting that happens early on with the text messages and phone calls, just the way that that was depicted on screen was really creative. I really enjoyed that as well. So kudos to Matthew Lopez. It's his first film after, his success on stage with Some Like It Hot. So that's really, really exciting there. All right, Josh, let's dive into some of the news here, and I'll get your reaction to some of the fun stuff that we have to talk about. First of all is the writer's strike and the actor's strike, which is ongoing and continues to threaten, I think, the momentum of cinema right now with Barbenheimer weekend and some of the other stuff we have coming up. One of the interesting pieces that's happening here is the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, has been going back and forth with the producers and finally traded proposals the other day. And one of the points that they're making here, or one of the things that they're doing, is ensuring that they're not going to speak publicly about these proposals until they have to. So the letter that I had seen, or the email that was sent out to members of the WGA, was basically saying when things go public, a lot of the dialogue around what is being, what is being discussed, and a lot of that stuff that kind of spirals into poor takes that don't necessarily have positive influences on the negotiation process. So they're kind of trading proposals and continuing to work in a little bit of a vacuum. But I think that makes sense here. Just basic negotiation. You don't want to put anyone on blast while you're trying to get something out of them. That would be a positive here. But the bigger story here, I think, is while there's good momentum there, it seems, Bob Iger, who really got some flack for his kind of off-the-cuff comments in an interview last month, has sort of had a reverse course here and said, quote, "Nothing is more important to this company than its relationships with the creative community. That includes actors, writers, animators, directors, and producers. I have deep respect and appreciation to how vital they are to the extraordinary creative engage or engine that drives this company and our industry. We have hit the 100-day mark of the writer's strike. What do you make of Bob Iger sort of backtracking here and, trying to, I think, save face a little bit?
I think it's just that. It's just kind of BS and posturing and him trying to save face, because clearly he had one opinion and, I don't think it really changed overnight. I mean, he was calling the strikes disruptive, which I kind of find kind of funny. I mean, isn't that the point to for them to be disruptive?
Right.
If they're not disruptive to productions and all, and
and cast and crew day by day, then what's really the point? No change is going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. What's another fascinating aspect here, and I didn't put this in the outline, but I can't remember which Real Housewife it is, but they're driving for a reality star union, which I think is sort of a connective tissue here to the larger strikes that are happening and just making sure that they're being treated fairly. So we're continuing to see more unionization. I mean, another thing I didn't put in here is that the VFX crews at Marvel are moving towards unionization as well. So it's, I look at the posturing here and the standoff between the producers, the companies, and the writers and the actors. And I think, like, yes, obviously there needs to be a settlement that results in fair pay and fair treatment, and gives, in my opinion, a lot of the power to the creatives because they're driving they're the driving force behind entertainment in general. But it's kind of interesting because I do look at this and say it's not just so easy as the writers are on strike, or it's not so easy as just like the actors are on strike. These companies are about to deal with a whole lot more shit when it comes to, the VFX artists, and if there's reality and whatever that looks like. I think there's a lot of positive movement from these individuals to go out and get what they deserve. And that is going to hit the companies hard, and they can afford them. They can definitely afford all this. But it's, I do, from a business perspective, look at like how that all plays out for them, because it is going to change the structures of these companies.
Yeah, it's kind of like a domino effect,
Now that it's happened with a couple different unions, it's just going to be, yeah, it's going to be all the way around. It
Yeah.
is going to be interesting though with the
Yeah.
reality thing. Like, is every drag race along gonna be on that union? I'm curious.
Well, it's funny because I was listening to Race Chaser with Alaska and Willem this week, and Willem's the one that mentioned it. And then I was like, I looked it up on the side, and I'm like, oh yeah, this really is happening.
Wow. Well, more power
Yeah.
to them.
Hey, I mean, I guess it makes sense when reality is such a driving force. But it is interesting that you bring that up too, with like, there's every drag queen from Drag Race going to be in there. And I'm a big Big Brother fan, and I'm thinking, like, are all the Big Brother contestants then automatically in there? Like, what is that? I think it's a little bit different. Well, maybe not. Then I'm thinking, like, for the actors, you think about background actors versus, principal actor. I don't know. There's a lot of details there, but all in all, I support them going for what they need.
Of course, same here.
And part of the job of these studios is to make money, and that's why when a film performs really well, such as Talk to Me, which was a huge opener for A24 and has been critically received as one of the best horror movies in recent memory, that's why we're getting a sequel called Talk to Me, I think, with the instead of TO, it's a two. But the Filippo brothers are returning. And this is going to go against what I said earlier with the Continental and not loving prequels. The only way I'm really interested in a Talk to Me sequel is if it is a prequel, because I would love to understand a little bit more about how this hand came to be. But is this a movie that you are interested in? Do we need it? Do we want it?
Well, I actually saw it back at Sundance. I watched it virtually, and I really loved it. But most of my peers, like when it came out there, did not like it. So I find it kind of interesting that I guess the critical and the audience, kind of turned in the other way. But I loved it as like a singular movie. I don't know that it needs to be franchised, but I could also see that because, I mean, you can just keep, having people possessed by the spirits. I mean, but again, at that point, if that's all that it's doing, it's just rehashing. It kind of seems a little boring. I think a prequel, finding out where this embalmed hand really came from, probably is a lot more interesting
Yeah.
than just constant, sequelizing. But we'll see what happens.
It's funny because I feel like horror always takes off into multiple sequels because of how cheap it is to make. And we get that with what Saw 10 coming in September, and you look at all the sequels that came from Halloween and the like. I hope they don't beat this into the ground. I don't see A24 beating this into the ground, but it is interesting that A24 greenlit a sequel. right around the same time that they announced Dicks the Musical coming out. So A24 are always doing a lot.
Yeah, I hope you're ready for a Talk to Me in Space. Maybe we'll get there.
It's so true. It's so true. Talk to me. Yeah. Evil dies tonight. All right. One of the other interesting things that's been going on right now. So we talk about DC a lot, and I'll start kind of a little bit backwards. The first reactions to Blue Beetle have come out, and DC really needs a win here. And Blue Beetle is a, I think, a really exciting property because it is a Latino story. It's the first Latino superhero that we'll see on screen. From all everything I'm reading, it sounds like the performances are great, and there's a lot of people saying that it's just a really fun movie. So it's, I'm glad to see the positive reactions. I caution everyone that there were extremely positive reactions with The Flash, and we see how that ended up. But I think I'm rooting for the Blue Beetle more than I was rooting for The Flash, so I'm hoping that that all plays out. But one of the pieces that's come out about this is that the main character here, the Blue Beetle himself, that character is going to continue in the DCU under James Gunn and Peter Safran, and is the first real character entering the DCU. And of course, we're seeing this before the official launch of the new direction when Superman Legacy hits theaters in 2025. But we are still dealing with the remnants of what has come before. And in an interview that surfaced last week, which was conducted before the SAG-AFTRA strike, Gal Gadot had basically mentioned, or basically, quote-unquote, confirmed that she was invited, quote, to meet with James Gunn and Peter Safran, and they told me, and I'm quoting, "You're in the best hands. We're going to develop Wonder Woman 3 with you. We love you as Wonder Woman. You've got nothing to worry about." And then she said, "So time will tell." And then sources told Variety after that, quote, "Nothing was ever promised to Gadot regarding Wonder Woman 3. There's no definitive discussion of Gadot's version of the character carrying over into the DC universe." While I enjoy her as the character, I don't think it would make sense to continue her on. But it's just, I can't get enough of the drama around DC because they can never escape the shit that they just like find themselves in. It's always a whirlwind there. But Josh, what are your thoughts on all of this, the back and forth between DC, Gal Gadot, and where they're going?
Yeah, I think ever since the Zack Snyder universe started, it's been a lot of drama just from movie to movie, from hands over. It's been kind of a mess. And Wonder Woman 2, personally, I hated. just gonna put that lightly. I loved the first one though. So I mean, I can't say that I'm clamoring for a Wonder Woman 3, but I do think it's interesting. Like, why would she have said that if it wasn't even at least discussed? Maybe it was just like a in general kind of thing. Like, we'll keep you in mind. It sounded like it was confirmed. Like, oh yeah, they want me definitely for Wonder Woman 3, and now it's like complete 180. So it's a little bit confusing, which is on par for DC because generally most of their decisions have been pretty confusing. I still want to see Batwoman. So yeah, I don't know.
It's really, it's fascinating. It's a real, they're two opposite things. You're either in it or you're not. I mean, it's not like, I don't know where the confusion was. If she's saying that she was told that you're in good hands, like there, it's pretty specific. It's pretty specific statement there. I will say this isn't a public, this isn't like an official DC statement that they're coming out and saying like she's wrong. But the sources are saying that, and I will note that to this point, it's what we're recording this on Sunday, August 13th. The story broke a few days ago, and James Gunn, who is very vocal about DC stuff on Twitter, has yet to address this. And I think that's pretty notable. I don't know what that means. I just think it's pretty interesting that he hasn't said anything about it.
Yeah, he usually like immediately addresses whether it's like, you know, the casting rumors that, you know, I mean, I'm sure you saw all over Twitter in the last however many weeks, there's been all kinds of crazy casting rumors, and you know, there's all the stuff leading up to Superman reveal, and yeah, he usually always addresses things, so it is kind of a little strange that it was not addressed.
James Gunn loves to call out a false report, and it's pretty fascinating there, which makes me believe that it is I don't know what to believe there, because we have two different pieces of that report. Oh man, did you see Heart of Stone yet?
No, I was supposed to watch it, but also again they sent it one day before the embargo, so I never got to it, to be honest with you. Was it
Netflix is
good?
tough like that.
Yeah.
No.
Oh my God.
She's good at, I would say the performances are good with what they're given to work with, but I found the script and the entire film to be a little bit of a mess. It's very generic. And the action, there's a ton of action, but it's action at the expense of any other character development or anything. So you don't really have an investment. And I don't know. It ended and I was like, okay, that was a movie. Like I spent 2 hours watching that.
That's a lot of those Netflix action movies, like Extraction, and they're just, I don't have any problem with them, I guess, but they're just very generic. I mean, like you said, there's not really much going on there.
See, I love
Meanwhile, they get
Extraction.
bigger stars. I don't know. Oh, I mean, I thought it was okay. I didn't hate it, but I didn't see the second one, so I don't. I heard the second one was better, but again, I didn't
It's
see
really
it,
good.
so I only watched the first one.
It's Netflix is always chasing a franchise, and that's when I was watching Heart of Stone. I was like, that's all this is. They're trying to set up this really complicated world in a way where they ultimately can just do sequels and keep going. I'll tell you at the end of it, I'm gonna butcher the names here. Oh my gosh, let me look it up real quick. But there's a point in this movie where there's three characters that really stand out, and one is the character's name is Kia, but she's played by Aaliyah Bat or Bot, and then Gal Gadot's Rachel Stone, and then Matthew, or I'm sorry, Matthias Schweighöfer. I knew I was going to butcher that. But he plays a character called the Jack of Hearts, and if you remember, he was in Army of the Dead and then Army of Thieves. And I think he's a really delightful actor. He plays these roles really fun. It's kind of the same role in this where he's kind of like relegated to the sidekick. But there's a point where I was watching this where I was thinking, that's a very interesting movie right there. Like, put those three characters together and get rid of all this riffraff and let's just continue. Like, show me them. Like, that's what I would love to see. So if they go that direction with a sequel, I think that would be much more interesting. There's a good twist in Heart of Stone, which I thought I was like, okay, here we go. We're gonna really get going here, and then it kind of just like peters out again. But all that to say, Gal Gadot keeps getting thrown into these roles where I don't know that we've seen the full cadre, if you will, of what she could do. And I don't know that we're gonna get that when she plays when she's in Snow White as the villain either. So.
I'm kind of excited for Snow White because Andrew Burnap is the prince in that, and Matthew Lopez is the inheritance. When I saw that on Broadway, I was like blown away by him. So I am excited for him as the prince. I hope that she kills it as the evil queen because I can see her in that. But again, I don't know. I don't know that it's much range for her, but
Yeah,
it
I
would
would
be
love to
cool.
see
Good.
her. Yeah, I would love to see her take on some more. I don't know. I don't know. It's frustrating. She's very typecast in these like action films. So maybe it will be a little bit of a different approach when she's the evil queen. But I also worry about that movie because I feel like that movie is going to get destroyed the way that people tried to destroy The Little Mermaid because of casting.
It is indeed,
There's
or it's already happening with those set photos. It's been happening for a while, so
Yeah.
yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Did you see Red Notice? That was also pretty generic.
Yeah, Red Notice is pretty generic. I had more, I was thinking about this yesterday. I had more fun with Red Notice. I think it was just because it was like so ridiculous and the three of them are so, I think, charismatic in it. That's another example of Netflix just trying to build out a franchise, you know, big stars. Try to get those people. But so I'm arguing with myself here because the other thing that I was thinking yesterday is who is signing up for Netflix to watch Heart of Stone? And I don't think there's many people that are doing that. So I don't understand Netflix's approach to some of this stuff.
Yeah, if it's a TV show or
Or an actual event movie, like maybe a, I don't know, like some kind of nostalgic sequel thing, which have they even done one of those recently? I don't think so. So I don't know. I don't know who's going specifically for that. Probably no
Yeah,
one.
probably no one. All right, Josh, we like to wrap up every week with our rants and raves. We used to do a rant or a rave, and then we realized that we were just doing rants, so we needed to throw in raves as well to be a little bit more positive. But this can really touch on anything, and I'm going to start off here. This is one I actually struggled with this a little bit, but I get really frustrated with people pushing their views on films onto other people. I like to have fun with people when we disagree and just like go back and forth a little bit. But at the end of the day, however you liked or did dislike the film is your purview, and I'm totally fine with that. But what I've noticed with other people, and a lot of times it's just like internet trolls and stuff, but it's been happening with Red, White, and Royal Blue, where some people are trying to tell me how terrible it is and how stupid my reactions are. And most recently, I had someone comment on my YouTube saying, like, this is a homosexual film. And of course, this gay, referring to me, is going to enjoy it, and things like that. So I thought it was pretty disrespectful and negative. And I am, like I said, I'm all about discussing different opinions on film. I think that's one of the best parts of the film community, is that we both can sit down and watch a movie and take different things from it. What I don't like is, aside from like trying to ask questions like, oh, you didn't like so-and-so, tell me more about that, or tell me more about that, like what you didn't like from the, you know, the story or what it may be. Just telling people that they're wrong and telling people they're stupid or whatever it may be, just for the sake of, you know, trying to make yourself feel better about something that you liked or disliked, is really frustrating to me. And I struggle with that a lot when I post reviews. I feel like a lot of times my reviews are against the grain a little bit. And I kind of like, I own that. I enjoy that a little bit. But I just get really frustrated when people think they're going to be able to change my opinions on a movie just by telling me I'm wrong and that I'm stupid and need to, you know, reevaluate my judgment. Do you get that a lot, Josh, with your reviews and stuff? Do people come out of the woodwork and like kind of go after you for your thoughts?
Unfortunately, yes. The thing is, a lot of times if it's a super negative review, sometimes I'm just like, I don't have the energy to write it, so I will pass on it. But there has been many, I wrote a mixed review for Only Murders in the Building for the first season. And I had like thousands, I woke up to thousands of messages from Selena Gomez people attacking me. And it was a mixed review. It wasn't even like I was trashing the show. I just wasn't crazy about it. And I woke up to so many messages of people flipping out. Like, things can be a conversation. It doesn't have to be like, oh, you're wrong. You know, like, I don't know. It's, that really rubs me the wrong way though too.
It's really frustrating. Does that fold in or lead into your rant here?
Yeah, it definitely does, because on a pretty similar note, I've had some issues with publicists. There was a recent movie, it was called Pure O. I don't know if it ever even got distribution, but my editor Allison, she wrote a review for it, sent the review over, and basically the whole team flipped out. They attacked her intelligence. They insinuated she shouldn't be writing a review because of her OCD. Meanwhile, it's a movie about OCD, so she kind of would have a bit of a perspective, you know, on said movie. And then we had, I believe it was the director's wife was commenting on the reviews. The publicist was going back and forth saying, you need to take this review down. This has to go down. Like, and then they started threatening us with screener access too. Being that it was a film festival, I don't even remember which festival this was for, but being that it was a film festival, they were like, oh, I'm going to reach out to the festival and I'm going to make sure that your screener access is cut off in the future. Like, they were just being so obnoxious. And I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, it was like a 2-star review. And it really wasn't that harsh. I mean, I have written harsher reviews myself. So yeah. It was just very, very confusing to me. I don't understand. Like, again, you're asking me to cover your movie, so what my opinion is what it's going to be, and you're not going to change what my opinion is. No matter how many times you try to, you know, lobby threats or whatever you want to do, I mean, that's not going to change my opinion. So
I struggle with that a lot and I'm sure you get this too, with the people that will reach out, or publicists that will reach out asking you to cover XYZ film. And because a lot of times I'm like, listen, I'm going to be obviously always honest with how I feel about it. But I always wonder when I'm sending these over, if the publicist is going to be like, oh no, and like lose their minds or whatnot. I think most times, they won't, because they're just doing a job and they know that that's, you know, part of it. But when you have these smaller films, or the films that people are more, intricately involved with, it's really wild that they are not prepared for potential negative reviews that aren't in line with their expectations.
Yeah, I mean, that comes with criticism. You're going to have positive reviews and you're going to have negative reviews. So I'm definitely not going to censor myself or what I'm putting out just to appease a publicist, because that's like influencer status. Like, I'm not in this for free shit.
Right. Although I did see that they sent out socks and stuff for Red, White, and Royal Blue. And I was like, I would like them.
Oh my god, really? Oh yeah, I would like them too. send some our way. The true gay fans.
The true gay fans. Amazon put up a store of Red, White, and Royal Blue, by the way. I saw it last night, and there's t-shirts and sweatshirts that say like history, huh? And I might bite on that. Cute.
I have to look into that for sure.
Yeah. All right, raves. I just started Twisted Metal for the first time, and this is really funny because I had zero interest in the show. I thought the trailers were horrendous. The images that they released were really questionable, but now I'm starting to think that was intentional, because the show is batshit crazy. It is unlike anything I expected it to be. It leans into language and gore and just ridiculous plotting. And this stars Anthony Mackie and Neve Campbell, your boo. Neve Campbell is really great in this. She plays like such a nasty leader role, but she's manipulative, and it's fun to see. She's doing something really weird, but this could sound really horrible. She's doing something really weird with her mouth in the first scene you see her in, and I was like, what is going on here? Like, they didn't do her any favors in how they filmed that scene. But I absolutely love her. She's one of those actresses that I wish we would have seen in so much more. And she's now starting to get, I think, she's starting to take some good roles and being offered some more roles in the latter stages of her career, which are exciting. And I'm pretty sure we'll see her in Scream 7. It's a really fun show, and it's a quick show. It's like 30 minute episodes, if that. And I've actually had a ton of fun with it. And it's, having not played the game since I was a kid, I'm reminded of certain aspects of the games just subtly thrown into the show. I'm like, oh yeah, I think that was something, or oh, I remember that briefly. And that nostalgia is a lot of fun as well. So that's a Peacock show, and once again, PlayStation adaptation, and they're doing pretty well, because Gran Turismo also was pretty fun. So I'm intrigued of where this is going. So I'll report back once I actually finish the series, but so far so good.
How many episodes are you in so far?
Two of 10.
that's a taste. And you know, you're not the first person. I actually have had quite a few people tell me, like, just that I know personally, tell me that it's a great show, which is definitely surprising, only because, like you said, that first, the teaser was terrible. I was like, what is this? I don't know if I'm gonna even bother, but I actually might check it out now that I've heard, you know, quite a few glowing things. So
yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's much different than expected, but in a positive way, in a really good way, that it's a nice distraction from some of the other more serious stuff that we end up watching when we're reviewing everything that comes our way. How about you, Josh? I'm loving this rave that you have listed.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of in the middle of a bit of a gay movie renaissance here, or queer movie renaissance. And, you know, I just wanted to shine the light on some of that and kind of applaud some of these movies and projects that are coming out. So obviously we talked about Red, White, and Royal Blue. We talked a little bit about Heartstopper, Aristotle and Dante. That comes out next month. That is excellent. And it's another kind of wholesome, not really geared around like homophobia and AIDS and all of that. It's just two young people falling in love with each other. And it's a very simple love story, and very good. I highly recommend that. And then also we have Bottoms. I think that's coming out in September as well. Hilarious movie. Have you seen that one?
Oh my God. I loved it.
So funny. And we have Prince Henry in it. In a very different role.
That's right. Oh my gosh. I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, very different role for him. From you know, I Fucked Your Mom to to Red, White, Royal Blue.
Oh my gosh.
Problemista, another A24 film. I don't know if that was pulled from the release schedule, though, being that there's the ongoing strikes, but That is still one of my favorite movies of the year.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic movie. Femme, also another great gay one. That one is a lot heavier though, because it's about a straight guy that's being kind of groomed into a relationship with a drag performer, and the performer that's kind of trying to get close to him, he actually assaulted in drag. So he's falling in love with the person outside of drag, and in drag he was assaulted by this
Wow.
straight guy. So it's intense. Very good movie though. And
That
then a
was at
couple
Fantasia,
others.
wasn't it?
Yes, it was fantastic movie. Of an age, that came out earlier this year. That was really good.
Loved it.
And then one last one, Down Low. That's a pretty good comedy with Zachary Quinto and Lucas Gage. Really
Oh, wow.
funny.
Is Download getting a wide release or?
I'm actually I don't know about the release yet for it. Where did I see that for? It's sad. I cover it for so many film
I know there's
festivals where
so
they all
much,
start to
right?
blur together. It was Outfest that I covered that one for. That was kind of like a dark comedy, because
Oh, that's
Zachary
right.
is, Zachary Quinto is someone that's very further up in age when he realizes that he might be gay, and he sleeps with his masseuse, who is Lucas Gage. And then it's kind of like a bunch of misadventures. There's some murder in there. Really funny movie.
So just some
Surprising.
murder sprinkled in.
Yeah, just throw the murder in. But yeah, I'm just loving that we have so many varied queer projects that are all coming out in recent years. It's just so refreshing. And it's not just all the same type of film, all the same type of content, very different directors and creative visions. And it's just very refreshing. And I love it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's very nice to see different types of communities represented and different stories told instead of the typical stuff that we see and that I think is safe. Studios are taking more chances with some of these projects, and we're seeing a lot of indie films that are getting their due as well. So I'm right there with you. I think it's great. This week we don't have any indie films that are big releases, but we do have Blue Beetle hitting theaters on Friday, as well as Strays hitting theaters. A movie that I continue to forget is actually a real thing. But that should be pretty interesting. Josh, thank you so much for being here today. It's so much fun to chat about these projects, especially with Red, White, and Royal Blue. Like, since we both enjoyed it, it made it a lot more entertaining. I'm dreading when I'm chatting with Sean, my podcast partner here, because I in my head I can already see his criticisms of the movie. I guess that's one thing after doing 150 some episodes with him. Like, we both know how the other one thinks a lot. So it makes things pretty interesting, but I'm glad that we were able to geek out about the movie a little bit. Let people know where they can find you and how to follow you.
Yeah, so Joe, thanks so much for having me on. Of course, anytime, I'm always free. So I'm over on Twitter at Poison Keyblade, and my website, joshatthemovies.com, and my YouTube channel, which is also Josh at the Movies. That's where I post most of my Zoom interviews. I did some red carpet interviews. So all of that stuff is right over on my YouTube channel.
Excellent. And we'll be sure to link it's in the show notes to all that, and people can follow and enjoy the content. It's a lot of fun seeing those interviews as well. And hopefully the strikes will end soon. And not only will hopefully they end on a positive note for those striking, but we can get back to having some great conversations with the creatives, with filmmakers, with actors, and go from there. But Josh, once again, thanks so much for being here, and we'll chat soon.
Yes, indeed. Bye.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here, wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.